It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
All right. I'm excited. In the house, Norm Blumenthal. And, you know, Norm Blumenthal is one of our regular contributors, but he's also an attorney who works on behalf of consumers and workers, right? He's the attorney that represents average working class stiffs like you and I, people who are out there grinding every day and are really battling the big boys in a lot of areas. Anyway, Norm Blumenthal works to protect workers and consumers, selected as one of the top attorneys in Southern California. And he's been a regular contributor here on Money for Lunch for a long time. And what I love about Norm is that you know where you stand. He hits you straight in between the eyes. Norm Blumenthal, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Thanks, Bert. Nice to be back. And, you know, we've always talked in the past about voting rights and how important they are. And there's a Supreme Court case coming up on the Wisconsin voting rights. And I wanted to kind of go over and give our audience a little bit of a history of voting rights because, you know, we're supposed to have equal protection under the law and each vote, one man, one vote, and they're supposed to count equally. But unfortunately, what we have in this country today is every vote is not the same, unfortunately, and that's created by a situation that's called gerrymandering. And for those of you not familiar with gerrymandering, this is where the legislatures of each state get together and they decide how to break up the state in terms of voting districts for congressional voting districts and statewide districts, so as the election of the state assembly people and senators and the congressional congressmen. So it's a tricky process, and the concept is, or it's supposed to be, to make each vote count. But unfortunately, from both sides and in historically, it hasn't worked that way. And in the past, there's two processes they do to reduce the power of each person's votes. One's packing and the other's cracking. Packing has notoriously been used to lessen the voting rights of African Americans who live generally in one area. And what they do is they gerrymander the district to put all of the African Americans in one district. So they end up having a disproportionate share of the voting power because they aren't uniformly spread out in terms of having their fair say in the districts around. And that the other one is called cracking. That's where you spread them out so much that they literally end up with no voting rights at all and no representation. Both packing and cracking for purposes of eliminating any type of racial power, they've been struck down. So now the court has this Wisconsin case, which is kind of interesting. It's a packing and cracking case in Wisconsin. And basically, if you look at Wisconsin in the case, in 2012, the Republicans won 48% of the statewide vote, but captured 60 of the 99 voting seats. So they captured 60% of the seats. And the way they did it is by packing the Democrats into districts. Like in Madison, Wisconsin, they packed all the Democrats, and that's a notoriously Democratic area. And in Milwaukee, they packed all the African Americans into districts. So in that way, the Democrats, by putting them into these single districts, with 50% of the vote, they got two-thirds of the district. So the question is, and it's going to be heard by the Supreme Court in this term, is whether or not they're going to allow this or come up with a standard, and they have a standard set up where you have to have a certain percentage standard. You can't go above that percentage. So there's going to be some give and take. And the percentage they're trying to come up with is, as a rational basis, is 7%. If it goes above that, it violates it. Wisconsin was 13%. So that's the argument there. It's going to be interesting, and we'll see where that ends up. But it all comes down to packing and cracking, and the idea of taking away each person's vote. The concept is there, and the racial parts of it are there. So in terms of the racial parts of it, I think we have to look at what went on in Charlottesville this past week and the president's reaction to it, because that's a big part of it. And this fellow that drove his car into persons literally peacefully exercising their right, walking down the street in protest. There was no violence going on at the time he drove his car in there. He is a domestic terrorist. He's no better than the person who drove his car in Madrid down the middle of the street and killed all those and injured all those people. And he should have been called out that way. Instead, our president, with his dog whistle, tries to give some protection to people that otherwise would agree with this kind of crazy behavior, and it should be called out. It wasn't. We saw the president last night trying to walk back his comments, but he already got praised by the head of the former head of the Ku Klux Klan and all the crazy racists that we have here, and it's common in this country. Yeah, and. I think former President Obama, called it correct. You aren't born a racist. It's something that you're unfortunately taught by others as you grow up, and all of us have an obligation not to speak hate speech. At any time, but especially in front of our children and others. This is just unacceptable. And it's gone on for too long, way too long. And these statues of Confederate heroes, these were secessionists. They wanted to get out of the Union. They aren't heroes in the United States of America like George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, who also had flaws, but they did tremendous things to be the founders of this country. Robert E. Lee was, not graduate of West Point, a U.S. Military man who turned around and left his country and went over to the other side to destroy the Union. So, why is anybody celebrating his life? It makes no sense.
Right. Well, and I think also, look, the way I look at it and the way I've always looked at it is and this is going to be the harsh reality. The winners take all. And so, when we battled Japan, we certainly would not have allowed Japan to come over and start erecting monuments to their heroes. And I really don't see this as any different. Now, again, I understand that, look, we do have freedom of speech and we have freedom of expression here. And I think those are all great things to have. The question is, when you erect a statue or a monument that is clearly, what's the word I'm looking for, is a tribute to somebody who did some or stood up against evil, right? Or stood for evil or stood for oppressing others, that doesn't make sense in this country.
It makes perfect sense
in Russia.
Oh yeah, and even in Russia they've taken down the statues of Lenin and Stalin because of the communists. When communism fell, that was it, and history changes. Things changing. We have a problem in this country with racism, a big problem. It's not over yet, and I always thought, well, President Obama's elected, we're now going to be a post-racial society. And I think in a lot of parts of the country we are. But in some parts, especially in the South, we're not. It's unfortunately not in every step of the way. And what we're seeing now is the same thing that we've seen every time the African Americans in this country have done things that garners the fact that they should be celebrated. There's a group out there that tried to destroy that celebration. And if you read a book out there by Carol Anderson, it's called White Rage, and it documents through history, after the Civil War, through Reconstruction, after the war in the Philippines, after the First World War, after the Second World War, after the Civil Rights Movement, and then after, now we see after the election of President Obama. Every time those acts happen, the African Americans suffer greater prejudice, unfortunately. The Jim Crow eras of the 1890s and the 19 through the 1920s, the lynchings in the South, they were a direct result of the heroism of the African Americans in the Spanish-American War and the First World War. When they came home heroes, the idea that an African American could be an American hero was anathema to the existence of these racists in the South, and they took retribution on these folks through lynchings and other horrible acts. And it wasn't much better in the Second World War, the Ku Klux Klan, but in the 1890s through 1920, all of these statues were erected in the period of Jim Crow. And the idea of resurrecting the segregated South. And so that's what we're dealing with, is ending this nightmare of in our country of racism. And it you can't have statues to persons promoting slavery, and at the same time working to get rid of racism. Because when you show a child a statue of Robert E. Lee, the confusion starts. Well, if he was in favor of slavery, why is there a statue to him when slavery is unacceptable? The enslavement of a group of people, it just doesn't make sense.
Right, and you know what? When you think about it, it doesn't make sense on the adult level either. And I know for a lot of people, look, if you were never a slave, if you don't have a heritage of slavery in your family, then you don't get it. I hear people say this all the time. It's not that big of a deal. It's because you're white. It's because you're not getting it from their point of view.
Yeah, I think that's right. And from a biblical standpoint, in the Bible, there's slavery and persons, and in this case, the Jewish people came out of slavery. And so if you read the Bible, you should have some appreciation for that, whether you're Jewish, Christian, whatever your background is, to have an appreciation that it is an evil. To enslave another human being, and by the same token, in terms of I do the labor law in terms of a working relationship, to cheat your employees out of wages, it's the same concept. It's not, obviously it's not as bad. You're trying to cut the corners, but there should be some thought given. Well, these people are working hard for me, and maybe they do deserve a higher wage, and certainly they deserve the fact that the employer should be following all the labor laws. And it's symptomatic of the position that in this country that it's okay to discriminate against groups of people, not through color and through religion, and through positions in the society and the workforce. And none of, we should be working against that. And we should be all working with our children and in society. And we shouldn't be in a position where this is continuing to go. And we unfortunately have a president whose father was documented to being arrested at a Ku Klux Klan rally in the 1920s. So he has a history in his family of racism. And he can argue all he wants that he's not a racist. And I believe in his heart that he isn't. But by the same token, as a person to garner votes and persons, he chants what he knows to be racist buzzwords and comments, and he's been successful with that to put unfortunately, to give this group of people a voice. And once they have a voice, then with that comes the violence. And that's what we're experiencing today. So there should be no voice for racism in this country, and it should be called out. And at the end of the day, the best thing we can do is in our courts to support the equal protection clauses of this country, to give everybody the free and same opportunity to vote in every election and to make their vote count in the same way. And that's what we have in the case now before the Wisconsin case now before the Supreme Court. So hopefully we'll get a good decision out of that, that these votes now, you won't gerrymander it so that people that of color and people even now the Democrats, because they don't control anything, are losing their ability to have their vote heard on an equal basis.
Yeah, what's interesting to me, you bring up a very good point here. I think is a kind of an interesting situation. The Republicans basically had 7 years to get ready for this transition, right? They had 7 years to plan for, quote, better healthcare solution. Now, their solution is Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act isn't any good. That's all they've ever said. And we're going to repeal it. But like a lot of whiners, they don't have a solution that's better. They, if for them to come back, if they would have come back and said, listen, the Affordable Care Act is broken here and there, and here are our solutions for that. We're going to repair it. We're going to restore it. We're going to make it better by doing this, that, and the other thing. Great. But instead, they say is it's broken. It doesn't work. It's a bad law or whatever. And the reality is that this is being done kind of what you said, back to what you said earlier. If the Affordable Care Act would have been done by a white president, it would be completely different. Instead, it seems like these guys want to repeal it just because President Obama put it into action, right? And my point being is they've had 7 years to get ready. They don't have a better solution, and all they do is whine about it. And let me tell you, if after 7 years and now you try to get it passed through both Congress and the Senate and you still can't, just shut up and move on.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir when it comes to health care. We've talked about that, and I offered plans, and the Democrats have offered plans, and there is, if the Congress could get together for once, instead of being Democrats and Republican congressmen and senators, they became United States congressmen and senators, and they work for the betterment of this country, they could pass a plan, and what it would require is some money to make it work. And this is where the rubber meets the road, because there is a group in Congress that doesn't want to spend any money on anything except defense, and everything else is out the window. And so they have to walk away from that. They're not a majority, but this small group in the Republican Party has basically muzzled the entire Republican Party. They're in fear of them, of this group, and as a result, we've hit gridlock. And I don't think we've hit gridlock as a result of they don't know there's good answers. They're just afraid to enact them, because if they do, they won't get reelected. And so that's where the problem is. It's not a problem of logic or understanding. It's a problem of fear of this minority group. And as you can see from the polls, Trump has a solid 30-something percent of this country in his corner. And in an election, the 70% would defeat him. It would be a landslide. 60% is a landslide. But the way it's set up is with primaries, this 30-something percent can basically kidnap the Republican Party. And that's what's happened. And so we're ending up with the tilt farther and farther to the right. And it is a reaction, I think, to having an African-American president. They did everything they could to deny him anything being passed, and that was their stated goal. And now they come to power. Of course, they have no answers to it because there aren't any answers. The only answers are when they act like congressmen and senators instead of Republicans and Democrats. And until that happens and there's some unity, you know, unfortunately, we're going to be stuck with where we are here. And maybe, you know, in the law, we always say that the law is like a pendulum. You know, it swings too far one way, and then it'll swing back, and it'll go too far the other way, and then it'll swing back, always looking for the middle. So maybe the light at the end of the tunnel here is we're swinging so far to the right, and it's so bankrupt. And morally now, as can be seen, this group of Trumpites, it's basically they've shown their true colors, that they are racist. And so maybe the rest of the country can realize, do I want to be associated with this group or anybody that would want them? You know, it's time to move away from this type of divisiveness and move towards a unified country where everybody is working towards the same goal.
I agree. Okay, so let's switch trends here for a second, or topics here, and let's talk about what's happening with the overtime rule. You and I talked a little bit before the show, and you mentioned something about the Department of Labor and some broad changes. Let's talk about this.
Okay. Yeah, what's happening is, unfortunately, you know, President Obama, they passed a regulation when he had control of the National Labor Relations Board. They passed a regulation. Right now, if you make over $23,000 a year, they can designate you as a person where they don't have to give overtime if they satisfy the criteria, which isn't very hard, to be an assistant manager or a manager, you know, up an aisle in one store. So instead of working 40 hours a week, you work 60 hours a week, and you get no overtime, and you get no meal breaks, you get no rest breaks. You have none of the rights that an hourly employee would have. And because they call you management or administrator or professional, those are the exemptions. So that was all passed, and Obama passed a regulation that took that amount to $46,000 a year. So a tremendous number of people that would otherwise be classified as exempt from overtime wages would have received overtime had this regulation been finally enacted. What happened was it went to court, and a judge, he enjoined the implementation of the law, and that law now sits in limbo. It hasn't been enacted, and the National Labor Relations Board is going to end up being a Republican majority, and they're going to take it back, and in all likelihood, that law will never see any enactment. And we'll be back where we were, because elections have consequences. And that's why gerrymandering is so important. And, you know, here we are. So that law is not going to work. And at the end of the day, we're back where we started from, because we have a Republican in the White House who appoints members to the National Labor Relations Board, and they're affirmed by the Senate, which is also Republican. So the tilt is, and you know, we've talked about this, Republicans are management, Democrats are labor. It's an adversary system. And so when you vote for, if you're a working stiff, as we've said many times, you really got to be felony stupid to vote for a Republican, because you're voting against your own pocketbook. So all these fellows at the Trump rallies that love him so much, check their paycheck next time, because it could be a lot higher if they would have voted for a Democrat instead, because we would have been in a position where these laws would have been passed, and that would have been exciting. But that's not going to happen. And there's, we've been following the case, the arbitration case, that's going to the U.S. Supreme Court. That'll be heard in October. And we'll talk more about that then. But it's going to be a close call whether or not the rights of all of labor are going to be taken away through the enforcement of these arbitration provisions, which preclude any chance of having concerted activity by laborers in the workforce through class actions and in the courtrooms. And that's even a bigger nail in the coffin of labor. But that's why we talk about elections. That's why this case, I bring up the case in Wisconsin, because it's so important, because if you have to have one man, one vote, equal protection under the law, and we're not getting it through this gerrymandering. So we'll see what the courts do with that. I'm not overly optimistic, but maybe
we'll have something maybe happen. You know what, and here's one of those situations, and I've said this before, that you have these politicians that have made this so complicated, and gerrymandering to me is a perfect example. You have to be a real SOB to come up with gerrymandering, and then I think you have to be a bigger SOB to say, yeah, that's good. I think that for a human being to say, hey, we're going to slice up this state in this way so we can essentially get the votes that we want and delete the votes that we don't want. This is one of the problems with having this system, is that you have these people who really are very astute at working the system and getting around things and making things complicated. Gerrymandering should never have been allowed to begin with.
Yeah, and before in gerrymandering, they didn't have the tools to basically say, well, and Justice Kennedy, the last time it came up, he says, well, give me an approach that I could end it. Like, what are you saying is fair? And I think, which is a good question. And then now they've come up with, in the Wisconsin case, with this 7% solution, we'll call it, where if 7%, you can have a give or take in the process, where you could have a margin of error of 7%. That can happen in putting districts together. Just happens by doing it. But anything right over that becomes intentional. And Wisconsin at 13% is clearly virtually double the 7. That was set up perfectly because, okay, you get 48% of the vote, but you end up with 66% of the legislators. I mean, that's not fair. I mean, if you get 48% of the vote, theoretically you should end up with 48% of the legislators, but certainly not 66. And so that's where they're at. It's just the gerrymandering in Wisconsin and a lot of other states have become so entrenched since 2010 for the Republicans that the Republicans control effectively, two-thirds of the states now in terms of the legislatures and all the laws that come with it, the pro-management laws, the anti-social welfare laws, the lack of women's rights to control their body, all of these things. It just goes on and on and on, and it becomes a situation where persons are especially in the labor force are being discriminated against. And so unfortunately that's the situation we deal with. But there's hope. I mean, there's hope if the Republicans can walk away from the racist part of their party and move towards the middle and the Democrats can move towards the middle with them, you know, maybe we'll have some of this unifying effect that we've had in other years, and it'll be a better country for it.
Yep, absolutely. Norm, it's always good to have you on the show, and looking forward to having you back again and having you keep us updated on what's happening out there with all these laws that are changing and these cases that are before the Supreme Court. If anybody wants to, if you think you need help, if you think that maybe you're being, maybe mistreated at work, maybe you got fired because you stood up for your rights, you can go to BAMLawCA.com. That's BAMLawCA.com. And Norm and his team will listen to your case and see how they can help you out. Norm Blumenthal, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thanks, Bert. Take care.
All righty. Good stuff there from Norm Blumenthal, as always. Controversial sometimes, but Norm just kind of, you know, tells you the way it is. And, you know, it's just one of those things. I like where his heart's at, that we as a society just have to do a better job of unifying our country. And one of the problems that we have, and Norm mentioned this, look, we have an adversarial system, and that's good because it allows us to have checks and balances. It's bad because sometimes we have this winner mentality, right? Do every, you know, win at all costs. Gerrymandering is a perfect example of winning at all costs. And let me tell you, things like education and healthcare, should that really be a party thing? Shouldn't all of us be allowed to have a good education? Shouldn't our kids all be allowed to have good education, to be able to access fair and high quality health care? That should not be something that you have to worry about in our great country. And I know what I speak of. As many of you know, I was born in Cuba, and I'm an immigrant to America. And let me tell you, America took us in, and my grandmother and my great aunt, neither of them spoke a lick of English. They were, when we came over, they were already, I don't know, 60 years old, maybe something like that. And, you know, they were given opportunities. They were also given some subsidies. And let me tell you, I'm so grateful for that, right? And they were given those things not out of humanitarian reasons, but because of political reasons. And of course, I'm grateful that they received those precious blessings, right? Call it good luck, call it tender mercies of the Lord, call it whatever you want. But these two ladies came to this country with no English and really didn't have the ability to contribute. They were already, like I said, 60, 65. They were given an apartment that, again, that was rent control, for lack of better terms. And all of this was done for political gain, right? We wanted to show Cuba that we were the good guys, and we are indeed the good guys. And I'm grateful. I'm so grateful that my grandmother and my aunt, great aunt, were taken care of. And of course, the family pitched in and helped them with some other expenses and things of that nature. We have a great country, ladies and gentlemen. I love being here in America. I love everything that America stands for. In general, we are a great place. We just need to get better. We need to stop being always about Republicans and Democrats and be about being about bettering humanity. And unfortunately, until Congress and the Senate change their way of thinking, we're going to be stuck with this winner-take-all mentality, at, you know, winner-take, winner, I should say, win-at-all-cost mentality And of course, a lot of people will suffer. Anyway, I appreciate you stopping by, and I hope that that you will check out my YouTube channel, youtube.com/ Bert J. Martinez. Great interviews there. And this week I'm in Vegas interviewing Randy Couture, and so you'll see that video up soon. As always, I appreciate your comments, and you can reach out to me on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch, and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.